Today's program has been brought to you by Le Creuset. Visit Le Creuset for cast iron and stainless cookware, bakeware, pots, pans, and kitchen and bar tools. For more information, visit www.lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com.
This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Short and hot with Chef Family.
Short and hot with Chef Family.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from our studio at Roberta's Pizza in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn, on finally a warm spring day. This is episode number 32, and I'm very excited because joining me in the studio is Jolie Carer, the columnist behind Ask a Clean Person on Jezebel and Deadspin, and author of the new book, My Boyfriend Barfed in My Handbag, and Other Questions You Can't Ask Martha. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad that you are here. As I was rereading chapter one, because chapter one is all about the kitchen, and I was rereading it on the PATH train on my ride in from New Jersey, laughing out loud, and the guy who was sitting next to me had this, like, he was totally buttoned up in a fancy suit, and he kept looking at me, and I was holding, you know, he could see, I held my book so that he could see the cover, which is very graphic and distinct, and I had this moment of, like, I love my job. Like, I get to read and talk to people like you, and I don't have to go sit in a suit somewhere. So let's dive right into chapter one.
Let's do that.
Okay, so the kitchen. Clean it or just set it on fire and be done. You should know that when I teach classes, specifically I teach a brunch making class at a place called Haven's Kitchen on 17th Street in New York City. And I teach people who are regular civilians how to cook brunch. And that includes learning to flip an egg in a nonstick pan without without the use of a hand tool. So I have done this. I've taught hundreds of people how to flip eggs. Every 20 people can't do it. Most recently, bless his heart, a Google VP. He was amazing. And he took it so well. And then we took a picture and Instagrammed it because I don't think he deals with failure a lot. And so it was really awesome. But the question comes up. Now I have an egg on my burner on my stovetop. Oof. What do you do? And my advice usually is open the window and just burn it off.
Okay, that's certainly one approach.
So when I got to chapter one, I was like, set it on fire. I was like, not the whole thing, but maybe just the egg. So let's start with the stovetop, because mine is so disgusting. I cook almost every day, and I'm not a clean person.
Okay.
So help me.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, I also cook almost every meal every day. Okay. I love to cook. I actually started as a food writer before I was writing about cleaning. So it is possible to be a person who cooks, you know, three meals a day in your kitchen and keep it clean. You don't have to. You're giving me this look. Like, I don't mind. I'm not making you. I don't want you to feel bad.
I know. I've read the chapter. I know where we're going. It's like, bring it on. I need to hear this.
So the thing is, I admire your approach to, you know, the egg problem. Just burn it off. That's certainly one approach. I don't think it's the best approach. And I don't think it's the best approach for a couple of reasons. One, it smells. I mean, you know, you said open the window. So you're already acknowledging that that's going to smell.
It does smell.
The other thing is, it's not particularly good for your cooktop. I mean, you know, if you're a renter, maybe you don't care. But if you're a homeowner and that's your appliance, it's really not the best way to maintain the appliance and to get, you know, the full lifespan out of it. So the best advice I can really give is just to get to it immediately. I mean, if you clean something up right away, generally speaking, it's not going to be that much of an endeavor. If you let it sit and dry, and especially in the case of egg, which is heavily protein-based and gets very sort of sticky and stubborn the more it dries, the harder you're going to have to work to scrub it off. So with the stovetop, it does depend to some extent what the stovetop is made of. That's sort of a general rule of thumb when you're talking about cleaning. Does depend what you're trying to actually clean up. So usually our stovetops are either enamel, which are the, you know, sort of the white ones that we see.
Yeah.
Or their glass top. In both cases, actually, you can use what's called a Dobie pad. Now, you cook all the time, so you probably are well familiar with Dobie pads.
I saw that in your book. I didn't know that that's what those are called. So, okay. So describe what a Dobie pad is. Once I read it, I was like, that thing.
So what a Dobie pad is, it's a product made by 3M. I think everything 3M does is amazing. They're also the people who make Scotch Guard. So, of course, I love them to death. So what a Dobie pad is, it's essentially a sponge that's covered in sort of a plastic netting. But because it's a 3M thing, you know, it's probably made of like NASA materials. That's what they do. So the good thing about that plastic netting is that it won't scratch most surfaces. So it'll be safe on the enamel and more importantly on the glass surfaces, which can scratch really easily. I used to have one of those glass cooktops. It was a complete bear. I clean that thing constantly.
And I'm glad to hear you. So am I wrong in envying a glass stovetop? Because I feel like it would be so much easier to clean because it's flat. There's no like...
Okay. Oh, no, they're a total bear.
Okay.
They're a total bear to keep clean. And part of the reason is that just because of the way that the heating element is structured, things get burnt onto that glass stovetop so fast. So I actually think it's a lot easier. Yeah, you have to sort of pick the grates up or blah, 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 blah. I think the enamel ones are just a lot easier to keep clean. They also don't scratch as much. So you can use like an abrasive powder or... what do you call that? Soft scrub stuff.
Right.
You know,
yep.
Cream. Mm-hmm. Cream. A berries of cream. On enamel, which you don't want to use on the glass because that's going to cause scratching.
Okay.
So no good. So enamel is better for keeping clean.
So I have, if I get my, I take the grates off and then underneath the grates, there are these black kind of like liners almost of my two burners that line up and I can lift that out also.
Okay, I was going to say, if they're removable, great.
They're removable. Okay. What's underneath them, that's what horrifies me because that, like what's on top, I see every day and I get to it. I'm like, yeah, eventually I'm going to get to this, but it's like tomato sauce and grease splatters and we just got a deep fryer. So there's like, that's added to the, but when I lift those up and I see what's pooled underneath, then I feel like a dirty person.
Yeah, okay. It's scary.
It's scary.
It is scary. So to clean that, the first thing you need to do, I assume you have gas.
I do have gas.
Okay, so you have to turn off the gas.
The gas line? Like,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, this is news to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
So just because you don't want to be going in there with the pilot lights on, or you don't want to turn the pilot light off and have the gas... going.
Right. Well, you know, I have the click start, but if it gets wet, it stops working.
Okay.
So, yeah. See, this is why I don't clean a lot because these are all the considerations. I'm like, oh.
Well, look, the inside of the stove that, you know, you're not going to clean that a lot. I mean,
right.
That's probably something you maybe clean out maybe once a year, maybe twice, depending on how bad it is and
you
how much it
bothers
you. You
want to know how many times
you.
I've cleaned the inside of an oven?
You've probably never cleaned
not
it, right?
Not once in my life.
Yeah. But we're not talking about the inside of an oven.
Right,
we're
just
talking about the stovetop.
Right, okay.
The cleaning the oven is a different proposition.
Okay.
So to clean an oven, you don't need to turn off the gas line.
Okay.
It's just when you're trying to clean that interior where the pilot light is.
Gotcha.
That's probably not something that you're going to have to clean that often. And part of the reason that you want to turn the gas off is actually because one of the ways that's really great to cleaning that weird, you know, it's like a weirdly configured area.
Yeah.
It's actually a vacuum cleaner. With one of the very small attachments.
Okay.
So that's why. But so obviously you can't have
burnt macaroni down there.
Exactly. Well, and that vacuum is going to suck that burnt macaroni right up. And, the pieces of onion that fall out and the bits of celery and so on. I have the same thing in there. So also don't feel bad. Like mine looks like that too.
Okay, good.
Because again, it's not something that I clean that super, super regularly. But yeah, the vacuum with the detail attachment is really the way to go. Obviously you have to turn the gas off to do that. Don't use the vacuum with the gas running.
Right. Okay. This is like mind blown. I've learned so much already.
Yeah. So there you go. So have a good vacuum and there you go.
So there's another story in here. It was about the grease hood, the vent fan. So I'm reading and I'm like, I've never cleaned that. And the way you structure this section of the book is fascinating because I'm like, yeah, I never do that either. And then you tell the story of a reader who wrote into you and said that grease fell down in her spaghetti pot.
Yeah.
That's never happened to me, but what I was going to say before I got to the part about it can actually accumulate to the point of gravity taking over and bringing it down into your food. I'm tall enough that I don't see underneath it. And so I can just keep the top of my hood clean and just completely ignore what's going on where I can't see it.
Oh, that's funny. I'm a short person, so it never would have occurred to me.
But now that I know there's a threat of it actually falling into my food, some of which is more than, you know, pasta, water, or grilled cheese, That's terrifying to me.
Yeah.
I should also mention that it is stainless steel, and it was originally installed by my husband's grandfather in the 50s. So it's like vintage. It's like art deco on the outside. It's gorgeous. But if I was to look underneath, I'm scared of what I'm going to find. I think it's approaching fur fabric.
Oh,
dust
dear.
And grease.
Oh, dear.
So how do I approach this if
okay.
I want to...
Okay, so whatever is removable, go ahead and remove.
Like the screen?
Like the screen, okay. Like if there's a light there, if you have a plastic light cover, anything that you can possibly remove,
right.
Remove.
Okay.
And put that into a sink with hot water and a little bit of ammonia. Now, I'm gonna back up and talk a little bit about sort of green products and not green products. Ammonia is not a green product. It is not environmentally friendly. It's something that if you work with, you have to wear gloves because it's very harsh on your hands, and you have to open a window because the fumes from it will be...
It stinks.
Yeah, definitely. So if you don't want that kind of product in your house, if you're opposed to it because of the environment, I completely understand that. Great, blah, blah, blah. Use a good dish detergent, dish soap,
okay.
In lieu of ammonia. Just know you're going to have to work a lot harder.
Okay.
So generally speaking, when you're talking about the trade-off between something that's eco-friendly and, you know, crazy chemical, the trade-off is that you're just going to have to work harder.
Right.
I will say that Simple Green is a product that truly is green. I've read the ingredient list, and I can promise you that it really is green.
Okay.
Not all of the products that call themselves green are, but Simple Green is one, and it's a very good product. So that might be a good alternative to ammonia for people who don't want to use ammonia. But
okay.
I think ammonia is the best. It's like amazing on grease. I like the smell of it because I'm weird. I know. Look at your face.
Well, I like the smell. You've mentioned in your book that people may be opposed to the smell of vinegar. And I was like, there are people who don't like the smell of vinegar?
The vinegar deniers. Yes, they hate the smell of vinegar. I'm like, who are you people? I love vinegar.
They've got to be like a fraction group. Like, that's got to be a small contingent of
people. I hear from them all the time. They call them the vinegar deniers. I know. I feel sorry for them. I feel like they're missing out on something so great.
So if I have a stainless steel sink, is that okay for ammonia in this? If I fill the sink up with a little ammonia in
yep,
it?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And then so I just let the stuff that soak.
Put all the removable parts in there. And then actually you can use, if you filled up that sink, you can actually use that sink as the home base for your cleaning solution. So normally you'd mix the cleaning solution in like a bucket or something. But if you've got it in the sink, you can just use what's in the sink.
You have excellent advice too to use a kid's sand pail to like make some whimsy in your cleaning. Brilliant. I love that. I bought a ladybug-shaped sponge the other day because it made me happy.
Well, there you go. Yeah. See, you should absolutely do what makes you happy. You know what I mean? By all means, if it's a task that isn't like your favorite thing, even if it is a task that's your favorite thing in the world, buy what makes you happy.
Right.
Absolutely. So with the ammonia, then what you're going to do for any parts that are not removable, of course, wearing your rubber gloves, you're going to go in with a rag or a sponge, something heavy duty. Paper towels are not going to cut it.
Okay.
This. So when you're talking about heavy duty cleaning, you want a heavy duty, scrubbing sponge or a rag, an old washcloth or dish towel is usually pretty good.
Okay.
Wring it out so it's not dripping, because you don't want to be flinging ammonia willy nilly all over the kitchen and yourself. And
do you need safety goggles?
No.
Okay.
You don't. You can wear them if you want to be overly, overly, overly cautious, but
okay.
You don't have to. But that is one of the reasons that you do want to wring things out pretty well, because you don't want to be splashing ammonia everywhere. And then just wipe down all of the rest of the parts that are not removable.
Okay.
So...
And we're talking... I mean, this is going to take some elbow grease. It's just going to go like...
I mean, if you're using the ammonia, you're actually going to be pretty surprised at how fast it goes. Yeah.
And how much ammonia to a gallon of water?
Generally speaking, four parts water to one part ammonia, three parts water to one part ammonia. I mean, you can be a little
and
loose.
Dish soap,
about
a couple
it.
Drips of dish soap too, or unnecessary?
You can use them if you can use it if you want. I actually think the problem with dish soap is that it suds up so much that it can kind of create more of a, this sounds odd, but a little bit more of a mess, just because then you've got suds kind of dripping everywhere.
Right,
The straight ammonia, mixed with water is really, you're going to be shocked. Like, I want you to take before and after pictures for me.
Okay, I will totally do that. And I will take this task on, because the thought of something falling from there into my food was enough to like shake me a little bit.
It's pretty scary. I mean.
Okay, so let's talk about the inside of a refrigerator.
Oh, boy.
Because I have a rule in my house that anything that goes into the refrigerator has to be labeled. Like any, like leftovers or salad or whatever. It needs to be labeled with a piece of masking tape, what it is, and the date that it went in there.
Oh,
and if
you're a good
I
woman.
Find it and it's not labeled, I just throw it away. I don't care if it's foie gras. I don't care. I just, there's no excuse. And I've thrown a couple things away and now things are getting labeled. It's working really well. That being said, that's where my clean person in the refrigerator kind of ends.
Okay. Well, that's pretty impressive.
that comes from working in professional kitchens where you get yelled at if you were caught doing anything other than that. And it's a really good habit because you know what it, you know, it's kimchi.
Exactly.
Like, there's no question whether or not it's kimchi or it's broccoli salad. Like, you know what it was when it went in there.
Right. Exactly.
So, however, things leak, things spill, things... So, what's the best approach when... I'll tell you the most recent gross thing I had in my kitchen was a leak of turtle blood.
Ooh.
Yeah. So... I made turtle soup.
Okay, that was that's a new one for me.
I had a feeling I might be the first person to have turtle blood as a problem.
Very definitely. I'm glad you told me about that.
I did not deal with it immediately.
Oh,
and
no.
Then I had, it went down behind, it was on the bottom shelf.
Okay.
But it went down behind the glass plate and then underneath the produce drawer.
Yeah.
And it, I only didn't deal with it right away because I was not paying attention that it was happening. Had I known there was blood, I would have immediately dealt with it. But there was just other stuff in the way. It wasn't until I pulled out my produce drawer that I saw, oh, what's that? And put together the pieces that it was actually from the turtle deconstruction.
Wow.
So what's the best way to deal with hardened on messes? Like, honey's a bad one. Lemonades have had lemonade spill and become like a paste. Like, what do you, or like sticky, tacky. What do I do?
Absolutely. So I really like, this is actually one of the places where I do recommend a totally green cleaner, which is, you know, back to our vinegar. White vinegar is a great cleaner. It's a great antibacterial, has almost the same antibacterial properties as does bleach, but it's safe. Obviously, we eat vinegar all the time, so it's safe for us. So that's why I really like using it in the refrigerator, because it's safe to use around your food supply. Now, generally speaking, when you're going to do like a pretty big cleanup, more than just like a little spill of the refrigerator, you want to take everything out.
Should I unplug it so I'm not wasting energy, or does it not really?
It doesn't really. I mean, if you're concerned with that, go ahead. I don't think it really matters that much. Generally speaking, it doesn't take so long,
right? Yeah.
That you're really worrying too much about energy loss. But yeah, if you want to unplug it, you can go ahead and do that.
Okay.
So, you know, white vinegar, dish soap is also another good thing to use, because again, you would use it on your dishes, so it's not going to, you know, kill you to be around your food supply.
Right.
The Dobi pad really comes back into play there, because when you have things that are stuck on, you know, have hardened, have turned into another substance altogether, you want something to scrub them off. And the problem with refrigerators is that the interior is made of plastic, which can scratch.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you might be tempted to use a Brillo pad to scrub some of that stuff off, but don't.
Or it's a butter knife.
Or a butter knife, exactly. That's all going to cause scratching. So the Dobi pad and, you know, just some, you know, natural all-purpose spray, white vinegar spray, dish soap, whatever, is going to be the ticket.
All right.
If you have stains, so that turtle blood may have left behind a stain, because plastic is porous.
Right. There is a stain. There are many stains, actually. Blueberry jam spilled with a cup summer.
Oh, yeah. That'll stain like the Dickens. Absolutely. So there are two different things you can do for those kinds of stains. One, you can make a baking soda paste. That's really great on stains. The other thing you can do is use a magic eraser.
Oh, I was going to ask you about the magic
erasers. Magic erasers are awesome.
Are they awesome? Is it the cleaning equivalent of styrofoam?
In a bad way?
Yeah. Yeah. is it ever going to biodegrade? Like, I guess it's like, I don't even know. What is it?
It's melamine foam.
Okay. So it's bad for the environment. Yes. But the trade-off is that it is magic.
I don't know that they're that bad for the environment. I mean, the thing is that it disintegrates as you're using it. So...
It
already is reducing. It reduces
its volume
itself.
Yeah,
so it reduces itself.
Are they one use? Do you just use it and then toss it, or do you use it and rinse it? Like, how do you?
You can basically use it until it's completely disintegrated.
Okay, I'm fascinated.
Have
by
you never it. Used a magic eraser?
Only once, and then I was like, I guess I have to throw this away. Like, I washed. I think I was using it to clean the bathroom sink. And it worked really well. And then I was like, well, now it's garbage. Like,
No. You could have kept using it until it just, it's like a pencil eraser. Like, as you use it, it just goes down and down and down in size until there's no eraser left.
This is amazing. Okay.
Yeah.
I have to try again because this is totally
so they're
amazing.
Great. And I'll tell you that there's like a big internet rumor that they cause cancer and blah, blah, blah. They do not. Okay. It's on Snopes. They do not. They won't kill you.
Okay.
They're made of melamine foam. They're not made of anything that's, you know, secret or weird or, you know what I mean? That's, they're just made of melamine foam. It's just a weird, sort of chemical makeup that they have that causes this. You can think of them as working kind of like very fine sandpaper.
Okay.
So that, which I mentioned, because whenever, ever, 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 ever you're using a magic eraser, you always want to test it out in a tiny little, hopefully unseen spot wherever you want to use it, because it can cause damage. So think, if you think of it just like sandpaper, sandpaper can damage surfaces. It can also make surfaces better. So you just always want to test before you start using it. I'm going to tell you the craziest use ever for the magic eraser. This is personal experience. I was wearing a pair of black patent leather Manolo Blahniks out one night in New York. And I got out of a cab, and I don't know if it was like the curb or I don't even know where it came from, but there was a scuff of green paint on my, I know, on my Manolos.
Oh, my heart.
I know. I know. I don't know what possessed me. I was like, I'm just going to try the magic eraser. It came right off.
That is amazing.
Yes, I magic erased my Manolos.
Did you have to tweet that at Jessica, Sarah Jessica Parker? We have to take a break. I have a song that is was recorded by a folk duo that my husband heard live when he lived in Rochester, New York, that I picked out especially for this episode, and I'm really excited for you to hear the lyrics.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm excited to hear it.
We'll be back in a minute.
Come on in and have a chair. Today's the day I clean the fridge. But we can talk while it's defrosting. Pardon all the mess. How you been? I just got back from Elgin, Illinois myself. For me, the charm of traveling is fading, I confess. Could you grab the pot of water on the stove so I can stick it in the freezer? This is so archaic, don't you think? This one last ice cube tray won't come unstuck. It's kind of welded to some broccoli. God, I think it's broccoli. Why is this broccoli pink? How about the onion dip? You think it's any good, or should we toss it to the dog? It looks okay, but I don't know. And by the way, I stopped off at the Belvedere Oasis, which is such a pretty name for such an ugly place to go. They shove those puffy sandwiches in sacks like so much garbage, and their shakes are largely lather, but I bought one anyhow. Look at this, it's sauerkraut. Now when did we have sauerkraut? Whatever this stuff was, it sure is sauerkraut by now.
Coming back. Sharp and Hot is brought to you by the generous support of Le Creuset. Respect for tradition and authenticity has been Le Creuset's guiding principle since 1925. Yet, their innovative designs and exceptional quality ensure that they remain relevant today. The company began in 1925 when a casting specialist and an enameling expert opened their foundries at the crossroads of transportation routes for iron, coke, and sand. That same year, the first French oven was produced, laying the foundation for what is now an extensive range of cookware and kitchen utensils. Today, Le Creuset provides the finest quality stainless steel, stoneware, silicon, enamel-on-steel, textiles, and forge-hard anodized aluminum, as well as the colorful line of cast iron cookware. Visit LeCreuset.com and shop the full line of cookware, stoneware, bakeware, kitchen tools, wine accessories, and more. Heritage Radio Network thanks Le Creuset for their generous support. And we're back. Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson. We didn't get to chat during the break, so we'll go right back in.
Excellent.
Okay, so the pantry. Another big question that I get a lot is, how long can I keep spices?
Ooh, that is a good one.
6 months. 6 months.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh, you're tough.
I'm pretty tough. Well, that being said, somebody, I was listening to Melissa Clark on Leonard Lopate the other day, and somebody called in to say that they still had their parents who had passed away, they still had their container of nutmeg, and they wanted to know if they could use it because it, like, was so heartwarming and sentimental.
Sentimental nutmeg?
Sentimental nutmeg. Everybody's got their thing.
I was just saying, people can get sentimental about anything.
Anything.
It's amazing.
And so her advice was, well, it's not going to go bad per se. It just is going to lose its essential oils. Mm-hmm. But I cleaned out, I did a very thorough cleaning of our pantry because we were overcome with grain moths. Mm. And so I'm wondering what your solution is to preventing dealing with infestations that are not your fault.
Yeah. I like that you said it that way. They are not your fault. These things just happen. You know, we live in the world. We share our world with insects and vermin, and they want to live in our homes because our homes are so lovely. Mm-hmm. So
warm and delicious.
You know, I mean, in some cases, yes, of course, there are things you can do to prevent, infestations of critters of all stripes, really. You know, don't keep garbage around, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, sometimes these things happen even when you're the cleanest of clean people. Pantry moths do happen. They're terrible, totally miserable. I'm so sorry that happened to you because I imagine you have a lot of different amazing...
We lost a lot of things.
We yeah.
lost a lot of things.
A lot of great flowers, mm-hmm. a lot of pasta things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a huge bummer when that happens. Unfortunately, when you have an infestation, you do have to just bite the bullet and get rid of things. You can't salvage grain infested flour.
Right.
That's got to go.
There's nothing you can do.
No.
And I like you write in the book that don't be sentimental about it. Like if my husband and I have made an agreement to stop buying like condiments and sauces and things as souvenirs because we never use them.
Yep.
And we're like, oh, I just threw away this ancient. I mean, we got it when we were dating, and we'll be married 7 years in July. A jelly, like a cold, and it was like supposed to be cold and hot pepper jelly. It was like mint and jalapeno or something.
Okay.
And it was at the farmer's market somewhere, and the woman was like super compelling, and I loved her store, and I was like, $7 for 2 ounces? Sure. 7, 8, 9 years later, I'm still looking at it. And it was a little hard to throw away because it does feel wasteful. But what's your advice on breaking that sentimental or just hoarder tendency?
Exactly. If you're not using it, it's no more useful in your pantry than in the trash. In fact, it's less useful in the pantry because it's taking up space that you need and or is blocking you getting to things that are useful. So it is very hard to break that tendency to keep things longer than we should. I know I'm guilty of it, too. That's part of the reason that I'm able to give advice in the way that I do. I'm not Martha Stewart. I'm not better than you. Martha is better than us all. I am definitely not. I'm just like everybody. I'm just a little bit cleaner than everybody else. But other than that,
that's a good way to describe it because that's how I feel about me as a cook. When people like you asked me earlier about the cheese that I use for grilled cheese, I use yellow American cheese. Like I'm just a slightly trained cook, but I'm just a home cook.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm just slightly more clean than other people. I'm not, I'm a normal person, you know. Things are not useful if you're not using them. That's a good way to break the cycle. With the pantry, you asked about the pantry moths, which are such a huge problem. You really have to throw things out. Get better containers. Plastic isn't going to cut it. You need metal or glass because the moths will eat right through plastic. They're disgusting that way.
Mm-hmm. And they were infested in my red pepper flakes. Which I was like, I thought for sure my spicy things would be safe. That was the source of them. And I was like, I can't believe this.
Wow, I'm actually really surprised by that. Who knew? Insidious.
They're not bothered by capsaicin. But I found the little triangle trap that you like buy flat and then you peel the sticky stuff off. That between throwing everything away and that, they were gone within a couple of days.
Yep, exactly. So I was going to say those traps are really great. And they're narrow enough that they won't take up a huge amount of space.
Right, yeah,
in
we
your
just
pantry.
Tucked it like in the thing. Then suddenly there were a couple of dead ones, and now they're thankfully gone, and we're dealing with ants because it is ant season.
Oh, my goodness.
But listen, we are out of time. I could talk to you. I want you to come over and, like, do a live. I want you to, like, be my personal trainer for cleaning.
I would love that, actually.
Both my parents clean. I mean, they were clean people, but, like, I don't remember it being a huge priority. I don't know. There was so much cooking going on in our house. There was always dirty dishes, and my mother tried to institute a rule that if you were going to cook, you had to do the dishes, and it was just like a constant sense of friction. But one of the things that you said that is my takeaway is that now I have a kid, and I have to train my kid that to leave literally dried out, frozen, or melted, frozen, then stepped on, then desiccated blueberries traipsed across the floor is not good modeling.
No.
And that's what's happening as we speak in my kitchen. So I'm going to vow to clean up my kitchen floor. I'm going to clean the underhood, and I'm going to tweet you before and after pictures.
Awesome.
And I'm really, really happy you came. Can you, we only talked about chapter one, so we've really just kind of grazed the surface here. Can you give us like a 1 minute rundown of the other substances and cleaning things, the grosser the better?
Sure, absolutely. So the book is divided up more or less sort of by rooms in the house and then clusters of problems that people have. So it goes into the bathroom. You can imagine that that's gross.
Having a kid answered my question, I wonder what poop feels like.
Yep. Yeah. Dogs and cats will also do that for you. So then, like common, I call there's one chapter that I call kind of the lady chapter. That's like your makeup brushes and your loofahs and all that dirty kind of stuff. Your car. Cars are filthy.
Cars are crazy filthy. Yep.
And then the last chapter of the book is the sort of what I call the disaster stories, or the greatest hits, as I like to think of them. Those are the things that you really can't ask Martha, or you can't ask mom. Those are things like when your boyfriend barfs in your handbag.
Mm-hmm.
So all those kind of horror stories.
And you have like
bong
water on the carpet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a must have in any person's library, young or old. I think you're so approachable, and you can talk candidly about things that, you know, most people cringe or like blush. And it's so nice to have a resource coming from someone who's totally logical and personal and hilarious to refer to. And I'm going to keep this just like in my kitchen so they can be like, what did she say about the ammonia again? Thank you, Jolie, so much for coming. How can people reach you?
People can find me on Twitter at Jolie Kerr, J-O-L-I-E-K-E-R-R. I write a weekly column for Deadspin and Jezebel called Ask a Clean Person. You can also email me questions at joliecare@gmail.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Next week on Sharp and Hot, we have Diana Furlow coming. With Love from Brooklyn is her company, and a phone interview with Canyon Ranch executive chef Scott Uline. I will learn how to say his name again before he comes on air. I am Chef Emily Peterson. You can reach me at facebook.com/sharpandhot, sharpandhot.com, or Twitter at Chef Emily P. Thank you so much for listening, and until next week, keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.